This season on the Creative Genius Podcast, we've talked about selling your business, building a succession plan, and getting your finances in order in case of an emergency. In this episode, we're talking about all three at once, as returning guest Marty Fonke joins Gail to discuss the ins and outs of selling your design business. Whether you're planning on doing it soon or many years down the road, you'll want to keep this advice in mind.
Hi, Marty. Great to see you. And I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I want to talk to you about building and selling your business and maybe even buying another business if you want to. So
absolutely, man. I'm so glad to be back here, Gail. It's always an honor and a privilege to talk with you. And you have such a great roster of past guests on your podcast that I just feel honored to even be here. So I'm looking forward to talking today.
You're so sweet, Marty. All right. Well, let's dive in. And I'd love to talk a little bit about selling interior design businesses. I know you helped our business coach that we have, our director of coaching, Patty Gilber. You helped her sell her business. And I know you've worked with other designers. So tell me about that experience of selling an interior design business. What's that all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did work with Patty. We've got a couple others we're working with. We've got an architectural firm we're about to put on the market. So really that space came in large part from you, Gail, and you kind of introduced us to the industry, and we've kind of figured out how to make that happen. As you've learned, and unfortunately some of your clients have learned, some interior design businesses are really tough to sell, and there's a variety of reasons for that, and we're going to get into that a little later on. And one of the reasons that I'm here today is to help your listeners and your clients make it easier to sell, so they have a better outcome. But I really love working with interior designers. They're you know, by nature they're creative thinkers. They're process oriented, and the types of businesses that they operate tend to be really, really lovely businesses that are, you know, they're dealing with, you know, second homes or upscale homes, and they just have a great clientele. So it's a really fun industry with really great people. And I'm just always honored to be able to be associated with anybody in the space.
Well, is there something different about working with an interior design or an architecture firm in terms of what you can sell it for, how you go about selling it, what types of things the buyers are looking for?
Yeah, so it tends to be a very intellectual property driven space, right? What does an interior design firm do? They design homes and businesses and commercial properties, and it's their brain power that is their asset. And so some businesses have a lot of inventory that help you value a business. And some businesses have a lot of equipment. For example, like a construction company might have, you know, dump trucks and tractors and things like that. And businesses that are retail may have a real estate footprint and a lot of inventory, things like that. A lot of things of tangible asset value. Where interior design firms, the asset value is oftentimes the brain trust. And that's a little trickier to actually sell and mm-hmm. to value and to get the bank to understand the value of.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So in the case of a company like that, where it is a little bit more intellectual property or creative ideas, IP, then what can someone expect for multiples if they sell this? And just to explain to our listeners, we're looking at a multiple of the EBITDA, and which is your earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So it's almost the same as your net profit, but a little bit more to it. But what would a typical multiple be that you would get for your business?
So there is no typical multiple. There's three questions that people ask us all the time. Question number one, what is my business worth? Which is kind of what you're asking me.
Sure.
Question two is, what can I do to make my business worth more once they get right. the number? And the question number three that we always get from interior design firms is how long will it take to sell? If they're contacting us, they're probably thinking about selling in some time frame, and so they're asked how long it takes. Valuing a business is different than valuing a lot of other things. So in the interior design space, we work closely a lot of times with real estate, the real estate space, the home space. So we understand that When you go to buy a house, there's usually a price set for the house. You as the buyer determine if you want to pay that price. And then generally you go through an appraisal process and the appraiser looks at comps and it says, okay, based on what's sold in the area and the number of bedrooms and bathrooms and the square footage, everything else, they're able to put together a comp and then they come up with a firm number that they give to the bank and say, this is the value that the home is. And then the bank determines the if that's worth the, you know, they're going to loan on it. And so everybody agrees that there's one number that that house is worth. It is not that way with businesses. Businesses can be valued in any number of ways. So you just mentioned EBITDA, which is one way of valuing a business. But quite frankly, EBITDA actually is not the most common for businesses doing under about $1 million, $1.5 million a year in revenue. More common is SDE or seller discretionary earnings, meaning how much is the owner of the business actually putting in their pocket at the end of the year? What are their earnings? And that may include things like if their health insurance is being paid through the business, if their cell phone bill is being paid through the business, their car lease payments, et cetera. So an EBITDA of a smaller business that's under, say, $1.5 million can often be deceptive. It can be quite low, but yet the business may be paying the owner a quite high or very nice living. And so right there, you can value a business on EBITDA. You can value a business on SDE. You can value a business on gross revenues. So and a value of a business may also have to do with the terms. If you are an owner and you're looking for straight cash, like I just want pure cash, walk away and I'm done. That's one value that may be lower than if you are saying, I'm open to maybe earnouts or seller financing terms, and I'm willing to stay on with the business for a transition period of 1 to 2 years as we hand it off. The value of those things, which are very intangible, can significantly impact the multiple. So we never talk about the multiple because there is no the multiple. It's kind of like when people say, how much is a car worth? Well, it depends on what kind of car, right? And it's the same thing with a business. So I hate that I can never give a straight answer to that question because that's just what people want. They just tell me what it's worth and there's just no one answer. And by the way, anybody who gives you just one answer, I would be very wary of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's the age old question, who is the person that is giving you that valuation? Are they somebody who's experienced with this kind of a business? Mm-hmm. And I would assume that that's probably way different than valuing most other businesses.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Just like going back to the home appraisal thing, I mean, you got appraisers who that's what they do is appraise homes all day long. They may have zero skills and ability at appraising commercial properties. And the same thing with valuing businesses. It's a very unique skill and a very unique job to do, and every business is kind of different. So you do want somebody who has experience specifically in a business like an interior design, professional services business like interior design or architecture, things like that. If you're talking to an expert who's only sold gas stations and restaurants, that's a different kind of skill set. So mm-hmm. you want somebody who has experience in actually valuing your type of business.
Mm, okay. Well, that's an important step in the process. And when do you think it's appropriate for somebody to get a valuation on their business?
So it's appropriate when you're actually thinking about getting ready to sell. If you try and do it way too far in advance, like if you're thinking, one of the things that I want to talk about with your listeners is when it's appropriate to prepare your business for sale or start thinking about selling it. And the answer to that question is as early as possible, which could be up to 2 years in advance. You actually had a guest on your show recently who I was listening to, and I was really, really impressed. He was talking about succession planning. I think his name was Bob. Is that right?
Bob Routh.
Uh-huh. Bob Routh. Yeah. And he was talking about succession planning, and he's got a 14-year succession plan for his business, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. We generally like to talk to an owner 2 to 3 years before they're thinking about selling their business. And we find that to be the right time. Unfortunately, most of the time we talk to somebody about 2 to 3 weeks before they're ready to sell their business. And then, you know, they've made a lot of mistakes in getting they're preparing their business for sale that are hard to undo before we get there. But going back to, going back to your question of when's the best time to get a valuation, it is not 2 years before you're ready to sell, because the market will be completely different. We don't know what interest rates are going to be. We don't know what the acquisitions market is going to be. We don't know what the inflation is going to look like, et cetera. So the reality is, if you're thinking about selling in the next couple of years, the place to start is preparing your business to sell. But a valuation today really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because again, just like your home, like you could have an appraisal done today, and what it did 2 years from now, it's garbage. You can't, it's useless, because the world is different. So coming in and preparing your business for sale, doing the steps necessary to make it the highest value, those are the things to do. But worrying about what the number may or may not be today isn't really all that important, because it's not going to be what the number is 2 years from now. Now, if you are planning to sell in the next probably 4 to 6 months, then yes, let's get you taken care of now, get a valuation done now, so you understand where you are, because the market is unlikely to change drastically in that time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what trends are you seeing that our listeners need to know about?
Oh my gosh. So nationwide, across all small businesses, recent surveys show that 37% of small business owners in the United States plan to sell their business in the next 2 years.
Wow.
That is huge.
That's amazing. Huge.
There's an entire population of boomers and slightly younger than the boomer population who are kind of in their 50s, late 50s, early 60s. A massive tidal wave of people who are getting ready to think about retiring. Matter of fact, of those 37% of small business owners planning to sell in the next 2 years, 55% of those cite retirement as their motivation for selling. So we are about to see an absolute tidal wave of businesses who are owned by people who are planning to retire, and something's got to happen with those. Now, the sad thing is 70% of those businesses are going to come to the end of their life cycle, and the owners are going to turn out the lights and walk away and get nothing for their years of hard work. And I really, really want to help your clients avoid that. Because if you do it right and you plan ahead, then there is hidden asset value in those businesses that you can apply towards your retirement that could be in the hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. But if you don't do the steps now to prepare, you may be one of those 70% that's going to get not one single penny when you're ready to leave that business.
That's a sad thought. What do we need to do to prepare? What are some of the, just give me 5 or 10 or whatever you want to rattle off. What would you do to prepare?
So first of all, you need a succession plan. And Bob Ralph really talked about that. What are you going to do? Do you have a family member that's going to take it over? Do you have somebody from your current team who might be interested in taking it over? Or do you need to sell it to a new owner? Now, those last two is something that we can help you with. We've facilitated multiple transition of businesses, like interior design businesses, where the owner has facilitated an ownership transfer to, say, the senior designer or the office manager or even the whole team. But you need to understand your why. If you own the business, what do you want to accomplish and when do you want to accomplish it? Getting that clear is an important first step. A lot of people kind of are thinking this nebulous, well, someday I might do something. The time to be thinking about that is now, especially if the someday is in any way going to be in the next 5 years. You really want to be thinking about that now. So when thinking about whether it's to a new owner, whether it's to a current team member, those steps and the processes you go through to do that are really, really critical, so that we can make sure that you get the most bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. So some of the things to do is getting your financials cleaned up. It's really important that a lot of smaller businesses tend to have maybe not the cleanest financials. They kind of plug stuff into QuickBooks or into, their CRM software. And they aren't maybe as, there's a lot of personal costs intermingled in there sometimes. So getting your financials cleaned up is a good first step. And also budgeting your financials in a way that ensures your business is really profitable. I'm a huge fan of a good friend of yours, who, by the way, you introduced me to, Mike Michalowicz, and he has a book called Profits First that I'm a huge fan of and advocate for all the businesses that I'm involved in, that methodology. So getting your financials, getting your cash flow, getting all of that in place is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Number two is having replicatable systems. So marketing systems, client onboarding, project delivery, having those systems be replicatable is really, really important. Because we have one business right now that we're working with that the all of the marketing consists of the owner and their personal connections. Well, when they try and sell that business, what happens to all the new clients? Well, there won't be any because the person's leaving. So they've not done a good job of creating replicatable marketing systems to bring in new clients. That's kind of scaring off a lot of potential buyers because they're looking at it going, I don't have the personal network that this owner has. I don't know that I'll be able to maintain the type of revenue that this business is doing. So not having replicatable systems that somebody else can take over and continue the business is really, really a problem. And then an operating system. So operating system doesn't mean software necessarily. An operating system is a methodology for operating your business. And there's several great operating systems out there. EOS is very popular, Scalable, Gazelles. And, I don't know if you consider the Pearl Collective Creative Value Blueprint an operating system, but the type of process and the type of coaching that you and your team provide to an interior design owner is the kind of thing that that makes the business worth more, right? You help them with all these things. You help them get their financials in order. You help them get their goal setting. You help them with their team building. You help them with their hiring and all of the processes, all the things that a business owner often does where they kind of fly by the seat of their pants. Mm-hmm. You with the Creative Value Blueprint really help to solidify all of that and create documented processes and procedures, which are so important. And then last thing is to remove yourself from the business. If you are an owner of a business and everything comes through you, that is a problem. Because the main reason is that is a business that is really not sellable, because you're trying to sell a business, but you are the business and somebody can't buy you. Mm-hmm. So think of an old fashioned wagon wheel. You have the hub and then all the wooden spokes that come off the hub. And if the hub isn't there, that wheel collapses. Mm-hmm. If you are the hub of your business, then that's something that has to be rectified before you can create a business of value. And part of doing all of that are some of the things I talked about with replicatable systems, with a business operating system. Those are all things that should be very carefully looked at to make your business very worthwhile down the road when you are ready to exit your business.
Well, I know you and I talked about this a couple of years ago. And one of the things I was telling you that we were doing too is that we were rebranding and we took my name off the business so that it was not linked to me as much. And of course, that was also very interesting because people thought I'd retired, which I haven't, and I'm still in the business and I'm still on the about page. But it's interesting that you have to think about that very fact that if your business is named for you and you want to exit the business, then you might want to consider maybe an alteration to that name so that you can just gently move away from it, but also be sure that you're preparing other people in the industry, people that are doing business with you, so that they don't think you've retired just because you renamed. So that was an interesting thing that I found out.
That is interesting. Yeah. And we did talk about that. And I have a new client coming on board that's got that exact situation. The business is named after him. He's had the business since the 1970s. It's like 47 years he's had the business, and now he's ready to retire. And we talked about that. And he goes, oh, yeah, like I'm going to go be on a boat fishing and I'm not going to be there. And yet my name's on. He goes, I wish I'd have thought of that a few years ago. I said, yeah, I wish you would have too. Because now he's like, now we're talking about how do we facilitate this post acquisition with somebody else owning the business. And so you've done a great job with your rebrand, by the way. I love everything you've done with it. The name is cool and the new designs and everything that you're doing to position the business for someday, you know, you'll be sipping drinks on the beach and hopefully the business will live on many, many years beyond that. And you've done a great job with that. But that's something I hadn't thought about. You know, the people, oh, your name changed. Right. Are you retiring? And you're like, no, I'm here. But have you had any, would you consider that a negative ramification? Did any negative fallout come from it? Or was it just clarification?
Well, it did actually impact us because we always love to get speaking engagements at Market. And one of the places where we always speak twice a year, they just made that assumption. And therefore, they didn't save a spot on the calendar for me one of the seasons.
Wow.
And I was so annoyed. And I'm thinking, why in the world did they not do that? Because we would have alerted them had I not been available to speak. But of course, I am. So yes, it did affect us. And I do think you need to think about the what ifs when you make these kinds of radical changes to your business. And it was a very, very, very big job. And let me just kind of share that a little bit, because anybody that is considering rebranding, you need to take your time with this. And when you rename the business, take your time. Work with a branding specialist. Work with somebody who is understanding what the vision for the business can be after you, because they do need to design for that. And really think about what are the things that need to be conveyed on your website so that you're really positioning it well for the next buyer, whoever is going to take that over. So there's a lot that has to be done with this. And it's not just the branding, but once you rename everything, you're talking about trademarks and you're talking copyrights. And just about everything that you have done in the past is affected by it. And also, so is your website traffic. So if you rename your company, you have to think about, how do I get traffic to my new website, which doesn't have the SEO of an old website? Like, we've been in business 16 years now. And so for us, we have to really work at building the traffic all over again for a new site. So if you are anywhere in the 5-year range or longer, think about renaming your business earlier than later and get all of these things transitioned so that your business is found online and that you have updated all the things that are necessary. So that means literally everything, all your social media, all of the things that you're doing to promote the business. You have to have all of those things ready when you're ready to start thinking about that exit strategy.
And this is such a critical topic, because interior designers as a whole have a tendency to name their business after themselves very, very frequently. So this is not an insignificant topic.
It is not. And I was on the fence about it for a long time. First, I brought my name onto the company. So this is our third iteration and third brand. And we did the Gail Dobie for a long time because people were looking for me. And then I wanted to get away from the fact that people were just looking for me. They're looking for our team, because our team delivers a lot of the content that we deliver now. So really, you have to think about this so early and start building your team as well. So that is, and that's part of what we do is when we're working in that creative value blueprint, is really thinking about how do we build that team over the next 3 years. So if somebody's getting ready to sell, they really need to do the kind of modeling that we do, which is helping them to financially think about what is the impact of hiring more people, what people on the team, how do you pay those people, how do you bill for those people, what is the cost structure for your company, and have that all dialed in, because that's something that that's our expertise, and that's something right. I don't know anybody else that does exactly what we do.
No, and it's so incredibly valuable and critical, because so many business owners don't have that.
No.
And that, you know, again, you started, the first question you asked me is, you know, how do we determine the multiples? that is a big impact. A business that is being run cleanly with processes and procedures and proper is a totally different multiple than a business that's, you know, maybe a three-person business where the lead designer is also the owner and they're flying by the seat of their pants and, you know, running their financials just based on how much money they have in the bank that month. It's a totally different multiple. Amen. It could be the exact same business, but it's a totally different multiple, which is why I can't give a straight answer to that question.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And it is interesting because as I've worked with people over these 16 years, one of the things that I have been doing for the last probably 3 or 4 years is I actually coach leadership teams. And so one of the things that we do, in especially if you want to get a lot of money for your business, then one of the things you want to do is have a leadership team. And the best time to have one, you can start off small. Probably when your company is about 6 to 8 people, you can start building a leadership team. When you hit 8, you absolutely should have a leadership team. And that leadership team should work on an operating system, like you said. And we modified EOS that for ourselves, and we use a modified version that we like. And it's so necessary to have that kind of structure that you're using in your business. So that's a piece of what we're teaching people. So we're prepping people in many ways without even intentionally doing it so that they're ready to get their business for sale. Because if you have the financial modeling and you know where you're going and you know how to build profit in your business, that's the goal. I'll share a story. We just did a VIP day with a good sized company, multi-million dollar company. And I told her, I looked at her financials and I said, we can double your net profit within 2 years. And she said, seriously? And I said, yes, we can. And she said, well, I don't usually trust things like that. That sounds a little hard to believe. And I said, okay, I'll show you. So we built out the model for her and we showed her exactly how she could get there. And she went, wow. I had no idea how much I was leaving on the table. I said, that's the point.
Exactly.
And if you can do this, and because the goal, I had somebody come to me not too long ago. Another client of mine hit $7.6 million last year and $1 million net profit after their salaries. And this client said, well, I want to get there. And how do I do that? Well, there are things you have to do. But if you can do that and you can get to that $1 million net profit, that is a magic number, isn't it?
It is.
And
it also affects that multiple number you asked me about. Yes. If you're at $1 million net profit or you're at 300,000 net profit, there's different multiples for that.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was saying. And if we can get you to that multi-million dollar level and we can get you to $1 million net profit or greater, then you've got the opportunity to really cash out at a wonderful level where you've got legacy money for your family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I get so passionate about it.
I know, you and I get so excited about this stuff. We could talk for hours, but
we really could. And I was just thinking about, I just thank God I had that finance degree before I went to design school because I was able
Which
to
is
take
pretty
that.
Rare.
It's pretty odd. And we
I
had
said
a
rare. I didn't say odd.
Well, maybe it's both. But just having that knowledge to be able to help people hit those different levels that they probably never, ever dreamed of. And the kind of income where, like, we've had a lot of clients where their husbands actually quit their jobs and went to work for the wives because there was enough in the business for them to come into the business, or they started their own business because the wife could support the family. That's a game changer when people have those opportunities and can start seeing the real value that they're creating in their business. Mm-hmm. So this becomes something way beyond just building a hobby business. This is a real business.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I'll get off my bandwagon.
No, that was so awesome to hear. I mean, I think your listeners need to hear your thoughts on that because it is so critical. And there's there is so much money being left on the table with so many businesses. And it's frustrating that we got to go out and keep spreading the message here.
Absolutely true. Well, and as people are getting ready to retire or sell their businesses too, what are some of the things that go wrong when they're trying to sell, besides the fact that maybe they've commingled their money or maybe their profit isn't what they need to be. They don't have documented systems. Those are a couple of the things that you mentioned. What else?
The two things that pop into mind when you say this. So number one is it takes a lot longer to sell an interior design business than a lot of other categories. It's a very specific buyer that's going to buy that business. And so the one thing that can go wrong is that you have expectations of being able to sell it quicker than you think. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating that it can take as long as it does. Unfortunately, it's just the nature of the beast. And so you've got to have some patience and got to prepare in advance. The other thing that can go wrong is not necessarily regarding it. Well, let me back up. The most common thing I see go wrong when I get a call from an interior designer interested in exiting their business is that they made no plans or provisions for an exit, and now they're forced into it because of a life event. Divorce, illness, spouse is relocating for some big corporate job somewhere else, mm-hmm. and whatever the reasons, a lot of interior designer business owners have no thought of ever selling their business and find themselves overnight needing to sell. Mm-hmm. That is the ultimate go wrong because they're completely unprepared. And then they wind up sometimes being in that 70% that just have to shut off the lights and walk away. That is why I advocate always prepare your business for sale, even if you never plan to sell it. Mm-hmm. Now, you had asked me before this podcast for three key takeaways I wanted people to come away with. This was my number one, by the way. So I'm starting to close the call here because that's supposed to be the end. But this question is leading right into it. Even if you never plan to sell your business, why should you do the steps needed to prepare it? A couple of reasons. Number one, sometimes life happens and you wind up having to sell the business and you had no plans to do so. And if you're more prepared, you're going to have a better outcome. Number two is if you are doing the steps needed to prepare your business for sale, even if you never sell it, your business is going to be much more of a joy to own. If you have a business that the books are in order, you have the right people in the right seats, you have a consistent, reliable profit margin and cash flow, and you aren't having to work 60 hours a week to run the business because you're not the hub to all the spokes and you've moved yourself out of the business to some degree, even if you never sell it, all those steps needed to really sell your business are just going to make you a happier owner. Mm-hmm. So why not start the process now?
Absolutely. And I think the other thing too is really thinking about your why. Why are you building the business? And then why would you want to exit? And what do you expect out of it at the very end? Because at the very end, you do want to have some sort of cash out as a reward for what you've put in, not just a salary, but the payback for that investment of blood, sweat, and tears.
Absolutely.
So Marty, thank you so much. We could talk for another 5 hours.
we could. I think people might get tired of listening to us. So.
Well, that's it. It's very helpful, and I think they'll really enjoy this content. So thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Gil.
Thanks to Marty for coming back on the podcast and closing out season 8. And thank you for joining us for another full season. Season 9 will start up in just a few weeks with another round of amazing guests and useful topics. If you have any ideas for guests or topics that you'd love to see, feel free to comment on any of our podcast posts on our social media at LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook, or tell your contacts at Pearl Collective. See you next season.